Welcome to a very special Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio, live from the UBS Forum at NPR headquarters in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Emily Reese. The Assassin's Creed games span a centuries-long struggle between the Knights Templar and the Assassins. Although the game is set in 2012, we spend most of our time playing in the past, beginning in the 12th century, and eventually landing in Renaissance Italy. Through all four of the games, composer Jesper Kidd has had the rich opportunity to blend old worlds with new sounds, using his own background and interest in electronic music, sampling techniques, and classical music to create the signature sound for Assassin's Creed. It is my honor and sincere pleasure to welcome to Top Score and Minnesota Public Radio headquarters, Mr. Jesper Kidd. Welcome.
Okay, thank you.
We insisted that we find a guest that's taller than me. That was the goal. So you have been writing music for the Assassin's Creed series of games since its inception. So what has that experience been like for you?
It's been diverse, you know. Starting out with the first one, it was, I was involved very early on, so I don't think we quite knew, what we had. It was very clear with Patrice and Jade involved that what they wanted this game to be.
And these are developers at Ubisoft?
Yes, these are the people, especially Patrice. He designed Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. Obviously with help from his team, but it was very much, he was leading that team, mm-hmm. Creative director. And it was interesting because it was so ambitious. And when I first saw this, I was like, this is just the most ambitious thing that I think I've seen. And then to see it complete with Assassin's Creed 1, I was really, it was incredible that they actually pulled this off. They were building a new game engine for this game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody had quite done anything like this before, where you could run around a city and you could crawl anywhere you want. Like you mentioned, you know, you can go to a distant tower and crawl that, or if you would just want to crawl this little house right here, you can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just about, you know, telling the game player, yeah, you should go over here. But the whole city was opened up. So that was a very interesting experience, trying to figure out what are we going to do musically. And then after that, Assassin's 2, we kind of put a lot of thought into, you know, how are we going to keep going with this franchise and what are we going to, how can we build on what we already have but keep making it better? Mm-hmm. Brotherhood Revelations, a continuation of that.
Yes, yeah, so just to, I should clarify that Assassin's Creed was the first game, then Assassin's Creed 2, then Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Yes.
Then Assassin's Creed Revelations. So they dropped the numbers after the second one.
So that's I guess
the
so.
Progression there.
Yeah. It's almost like there's Assassin's 2, and then there's the sequel to Assassin's 2.
Correct.
Which is Brotherhood, and the sequel, mm-hmm. another, you know, a third one, mm-hmm. Which is Revelations.
Yes. So. Yes. Which neither of us have had the chance to play.
I have not played the game yet.
who here has played Revelations yet? There's some handful of you have had the chance. Yeah. Well, you're one up on us up here, so... So one of the things, and then we'll listen to some music here in just a second, but one of the things that strikes me, and we were speaking about this a little earlier, that trailer that you just saw is so much more violent than the game actually is in what my experience with any of the Assassin's Creed games has ever been, is that it's so much built on exploration and treasure hunting and... doing all these other missions and the violence for me is so secondary, but then you watch a trailer like that and they really highlight it. So
I don't have an answer to that.
Right.
I mean, it might be the sign of the times. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, with Assassins, I worked on the trailer for Assassins 2 and we worked very much on trying to establish the new mood of Assassins. You know, after Assassins mm-hmm. 1, we went to a different time period and a different location. Mm-hmm. So it was more about what is the mood of, Italy and Venice and the Renaissance period. So that was such a focus that I think the trailer really spoke to what to expect in the game.
Yes.
And Yeah, that was then, and this is how the trailers are now.
So. Yes, and we're actually going to spend some time talking about the Assassins 2 trailer in just a little bit, because there's a very special story behind that. So we'll get to that, and we'll actually get to see it as well, so we can give you some context there. So let's go ahead and hear a track. This is probably the most popular track, Ezio's Family. Do you want to talk a little bit about Ezio's Family?
Yeah, that was an interesting experience, because it was not really written for anything specific in the game. It was one of those tracks I felt we need music for this situation. This is such a powerful moment in the story, and it's... Mm-hmm. You know, I think the title of the track says a lot. You know, it is written for Ezio and his family. And obviously he lost his brothers and his father, and they were hanged. And we see that in the game. And it's an emotional scene. But this music doesn't even play at that moment. And I think afterwards, people have kind of taken that track and made it kind of... People understand Ezio better now, why he carries this kind of sadness around, mm-hmm. and what he went through. And that was always my, you know, that was always the idea when I wrote this track. You know, so that's kind of the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit of Ezio's Family. To get to the violin part. That's my favorite part in that track. So someone watching me play any of the Assassin's Creed games might assume that it's a historical game that takes place centuries ago. And this, of course, is not necessarily the case. And this leads me to kind of the trademark of your Assassin's Creed scores. Since it's truly a science fiction game dealing with kind of a unique type of time travel, you get the opportunity to blend a lot of older musical elements with new sounds. So can you talk about this blend?
Yeah, it was, you know, when I thought how to score this kind of situation, and the fact is that everything goes through the Animus, that's this machine, and it's able to, you know, find memories in your genes, your DNA, which allows you to find... memories from your ancestors, basically. So if you had like a member of your family who lived like 200 years ago, you could find certain parts of his memory because it's been transferred through family. So, you know, there's this very sci-fi element to the score that I always try to keep in the foreground. So no matter where we go, it's there. And this is why I think it's good to be reminded that the Animus is an important part of the story. You know, Desmond Miles living in 2012, we go through him when he's in this machine, and we live those memories and we get to play those memories. So that's really just the reason that it's been chosen like that. Yeah.
And Ubisoft does an interesting thing where they remind us as players that we're actually playing through the future and into the past by having certain computer glitches appear on the screen as you're playing. The screen, all of a sudden, you'll be walking down the street in Rome in the 15th or 16th century, and the screen will kind of shake or glitch or something, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm doing this through the future.
Yeah.
Kind of. It's very interesting.
And, you know, I don't know if it's... I haven't played the latest game, but AC2 Brotherhood, the more... dangerous the situation gets, the more the screen will start to twitch, mm-hmm. And I think that's a very interesting kind of a reminder about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if you walk into a part of the city that you haven't unlocked yet or something, it'll desynchronize and all of these interesting things go on the screen. It's really unique the way they've chosen to remind you of the present and the future and the past at the same time. So, And so talk more about what kind of musical elements how physically did you do that in your scores, with what kinds of sounds and things?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for each score, but one of the things that does run through all the scores is just the way, obviously there's a lot of live performance in these scores, but once everything's been recorded, I like to manipulate those live performances. So it might end up sounding not that live, but it starts out as a sample, or just as a performance in a demo shape. And then we record that with live instruments. And then once that's done, we start trying to make it sound kind of like it used to a little bit, in a sense that it becomes more kind of low tech almost sometimes, or it sounds like, hey, the way you're manipulating that voice, it sounds like a sample or different things. But it's very much a conscious decision to keep reminding you where you are and that you're playing through Desmond Miles.
Yes, yes. So there's a couple of different tracks that are good at that. Can we skip ahead to Home in Florence? This is one of my favorites. I've always loved this, but this is very electronica in a way, but you hear this music when you're back home in Florence. See if we can pull that up. Assassin's Creed games are known also for their attention to detail and historic detail. They often introduce characters that truly existed in the past, like Cesare Borgia, Niccolo Machiavelli, Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, these are all real people that existed and are interacting with Ezio throughout the games, or the second and third game. The detail in the landscape is also just incredibly impressive. So did you find yourself actually digging into the history of either the Third Crusade in the first game or with the Renaissance Italy for Ezio's story?
I do feel I have to pay attention to it because, you don't want to go on a path that's completely wrong, as far as, fitting in with history. You have to make sure that you're aware of these things. But I try also not to be too influenced by them because we are making an experience that, have elements of sci-fi and these kind of things. But and plus the animus keeps coming into play, so it can't be too authentic. But it can draw on influences. But it's more about finding out kind of, what do you expect when you think about that kind of time period? Like if we're in the 15th century, the actual music that was around at that time, it's not that interesting to listen to today. We have advanced so much in musically since then that I don't think we were just... I think we were kind of bored by that kind of music. And it was... but I do try to take there's a lot of folk music around then, street musicians and all these kind of things were a big deal. And obviously once classical music and opera and all these things started getting, getting going. I mean, for example, opera in the beginning was more like comedic opera. That was a big, big deal. And comedic opera wouldn't fit into a game like this. You know, it's a much more serious experience. Mm-hmm. So it's about researching and finding out what parts can I make work and what parts are not going to work.
Mm-hmm. What were some of those parts that you maybe thought would work that you ended up throwing out? Is there anything you can think of?
Not that I can think of. I when I do research, I kind of just let the stuff that's working lead the way. And when I see something that's not working, I don't go that direction. You know, I just keep researching until I fill my brain up with ideas, and then I take it from there.
Excellent. I'll have to start trying that. That sounds like a good plan. Can you talk about your use of themes through the four games? And maybe if you have some favorites that we could pull up and listen to, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, the Brotherhood has a theme, and that theme was introduced in Assassin's 1. And I kind of reluctant to call it a theme because it's more kind of a mood, mm-hmm. and it's more like a repetitive, maybe two notes here, you know, that keeps repeating this line that keeps growing. So it's not, you know, it was to try to get into that whole mentality of Assassin's 1, you know, that took place in such early times. That was during the Crusades. Mm-hmm. So music at that time were very kind of primitive. I take that approach as well, trying to create something that sounds more simplistic, but how much can I build upon that to make it sound like it's fun to listen to, and it still gives all the power, even though it's just maybe two notes, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the themes or moods that we've been that's always been in all the games. Brotherhood's. I'm trying to remember the titles we gave them on the soundtrack, but it's the theme of the Brotherhood, you know, mm-hmm. that keeps coming back. And then there's also Ezio's theme, obviously, which is the Ezio's family, which has different variations. And that's been Assassin's 2 Brotherhood. I'm not sure if it's in Revelations. I haven't played the game, so.
So you don't even know what music they used of yours.
Well, you know, each experience is different because there's so many, you know, you work with different people, and each project, it seems I'm working with different people. So there's not like this repeating kind of notion that we're getting to know each other more and more. Mm-hmm. So that's you know, also one of the challenges of working with a franchise that keeps going like that, but you're always working with new people. But yeah, so.
Let's hear City of Jerusalem. This is actually from the very first Assassin's Creed game, so a lot of this is not live musicians, is that correct?
Well, the choir is live. we recorded that in Seattle, and that is more... So the theme of Jerusalem, it's definitely has the feeling of the Crusades in the back, you know, mm-hmm. that we need to bring that out, we felt. And Jerusalem being also a melting pot of Christianity, you know, versus the Muslim religion. So... Mm-hmm. There's three cities in Assassin's Creed, you know, Damascus, Jerusalem, and Acre. And whereas Acre is full-on Christianity, Damascus is totally, like, Muslim-inspired. And so this one is the melting pot.
And I love what you did with the vocals in this to kind of reflect that in a very, I think, tender isn't the word I'm looking for, but it's not so much that it beats you over the head, but you just, it's just an inflection, and I really like what you did with that.
You know, tragic was one of the key words we worked with. We were very much aware that I mean, obviously the Crusades were a horrific time, mm-hmm. and so we definitely wanted that to reflect in the music. And so it has, I think this track has kind of a, to me anyway, I went for like more of a tragic kind of element there.
Let's hear it.
distanti vi spericoli seruame
can hear tension even in the harmony. It harmonizes and it's all consonant and it sounds good, but you can hear that tension between the two styles of singing, especially because they're just such disparate ways of singing. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so. So we've touched on this a little bit tonight, but this is a point that you know, you've brought up a couple of times in our conversations, that sometimes people just assume that you've sampled all the voices, and this is just not the case. Your vocals are always live vocals, but you have this this tinkering that you like to do with them, and I've got a really great track that kind of emulates that, and we'll hear that in a second, but I want to know how that process unfolds for you, and what is it about that you love to take the human voice and make it sound different a little bit?
I think it has to do where I came from, you know? I mean, I came from a place that's called the European demo scene. You know, the key thing for me back then when I was 13 years old, when I started making music with computers, and it was always about trying to push the envelope and what can we do with these extremely limited computers. And one of the computers were called Amiga, and all you had was four channels of audio. And so you could sample individual instruments and then you could, you know, play those back, but you only had four channels. So I've always had this love of sampling music and seeing what can you do once it's sampled. That's probably where it came from, you know. It just excites me, you know, when I'm sitting with all my different machines and what can I do to this sound? And that's how it starts.
Good. Well, I understand we're actually almost close to 30 minutes already, which is ridiculous. I just want to point that out. but we'll hear some more music in a moment, but I definitely want to talk about this trailer for Assassin's Creed 2 and your background. But this was a very special situation for you, because typically when a film comes out or a game comes out and the trailer for that film or game comes out, the composers who've written for the game or the film aren't the composers who write the music for the trailer. That's, you know, almost all the time that's the case, correct? But for some reason, they wanted you to score this trailer. So talk about that.
I think it's like a bit like I mentioned before. Like, I think it was important to capture the atmosphere of Assassin's 2. It was so different from Assassin's 1. And what better way to capture the atmosphere of the game than to have the composer who did the score for the game actually write the score for the trailer? You're absolutely right. Most trailers, the trailer music scene is its own separate scene, so there's composers who compose for trailer music, and that's not necessarily the composers who write soundtracks.
The other great thing about this trailer is that what we learned once we got the game for Assassin's Creed 2 is that this is a scene that you play as a player, which was just fascinating. So let's take a look at it. Let's watch that trailer, and then we can maybe talk a little bit more about it after that.
Thank you. him! To the entrance. Don't let him see you. Wait for my command. Once I've dealt with you, I promise I'll give her my full attention.
Yeah, I pretty much leapt out of wherever I was when I saw that, you know, 3 years ago. So talk a little bit more about that. It's such a beautiful scene with the carnival in Venice, yeah? So.
It was really just in the spirit of things. Assassin's Creed 2 felt like a very special game. There was a certain kind of magic time, and everyone on the team, I really felt that we knew we were onto something here, and this was just going to be a really cool game. And it all reflected in everything. I mean, I wrote a lot of music for it. It's almost 3 hours of music. I took quite a long time to write it as well. We had a long time to kind of prepare for everything and work very hard on coming up with a new, sound for this game. I did not know at the time that, I don't know if any of us knew that there was going to be sequels to Assassin's 2, but it was just very important to set up the new time period and the new character, and then, you know, set up the new, you know, musical ideas for all these things.
So. I would love to talk more about that, but I think that I would be doing a disservice to the audience if I didn't ask you about your story and your background before we open questions up. So you touched on it a little bit, but explain to us what that means, European demo scene, and how you got into it.
Yeah, that's kind of a unique place, actually. It's mostly takes place in Europe, but there is a demo scene, and it does. It's a worldwide phenomenon. You don't have to be in Europe to be part of it. But I was in, you know, part of the European demo scene, which is the main hub for the demo scene. And obviously, I'm from Denmark. And even though we're just 5 million people in Denmark, we had one of the strongest demo scenes in Europe. Even though we were one of the smallest countries, I always thought that was really cool. And like all my friends, we were all in the demo scene, and I basically just ended up being friends with everyone who was in that scene. You know, I guess I just kind of, that's how things worked out. So my friends were programmers, demo. They were graphic artists. You know, I did music for like hundreds of demos. And it was very interesting because when writing music, when you're that young and you don't really take it that serious, which is great, you know, I really think that's a great way to start out, because one of the hardest things about music is if you take it too serious, you know, your barriers you'll start kind of like, is this good enough? Is that good enough? Oh, you know, that's not so good. But I didn't really care. I wrote a lot of music that sucked and I was totally happy. And I think that's a good thing, not to have that filter in front of you all the time that says you have to be great. I wasn't able to get into, the Copenhagen Music Conservatory or anything like that. So it was always just something we did because we thought it was fun. We just did it because we loved doing it. I wrote a track every day. The longer I did it, the more people I became affiliated with. it just kept growing. At some point, we were introduced to a group called Cryonics, who were considered like the best programmers in Denmark. You know, they were really kick-ass. We were more about music and graphics. And once we joined forces, it's like something happened. We did one more demo, and it was pretty cool. And then we're like, okay, what are we going to do now? We did this demo. We don't think we can do much better. So we decided to start a game company. And then at least that way, we could continue doing what we love. And maybe we could make some money on it. So our first game was sold to Sega, and we were brought over to the U.S. And that's how it started.
Very unusual that a lot of the composers I've spoken with actually come from the film industry or film and television. And so it's not that common. It has happened before, but it's not that common for a composer to come straight from. I mean, you are a gamer. You've always written for games. I mean, that was just always at the forefront of your mind. So it's a very interesting story that now that you've done this, you've then done some films.
It's true, yeah. And I mean, the music I wrote in the beginning were beep music, you know? I mean, that was even before the Amiga. You know, you had 3 channels and you didn't have any samples, you know? You just have these noises that, you know, was kind of like beep noises. But the interesting thing about the Commodore 64, which is what I started out on in like, I think 87, I got my, or 85 actually, got my Commodore 64. And it had an analog chip inside, which was very unusual. And it's still to this day is very unusual. Mm-hmm. You can even buy synthesizers now that has that SID chip inside. It's kind of like a little treasure kind of thing. But they put that in the Commodore 64, and you know, musicians were able to make that computer sing. It made music like I've never heard before. And I thought, wow, this is the most insane music I've ever heard. And I was just fascinated with that. I've always been fascinated in trying to push things as far as they can be pushed. And I think that started on the Commodore 64. Mm. And, you know, to add to that, another interesting thing about the Commodore 64 is that since you only had those 3 channels of synthesizer, analog kind of thing, the only thing you could do really was themes. You couldn't do any kind of impressive recordings or anything to kind of, you know, fill in the gap that you don't know how to compose maybe or anything. All you could do was you could do a bass line and a melody and, you know, maybe a supporting melody or something. But if you didn't have a good melody, your music was not going to be very enjoyable. So that was most of my music, you know. But I learned that way. I just kept at it. And it just kind of kept going.
And here you are with Assassin's Creed. Yeah. Well, I'm going to stop talking, even though I didn't even get to all my questions, but maybe someone in the audience might have some of the questions that we didn't get to. So we've got a couple of folks that are going to be walking around with microphones, and what we will just ask you to do is say your name and where you're from, and we'll get your questions to Jesper.
Hi, Jesper. I'm Mark from St. Paul.
Hey.
Early on, who were your musical influences, and who are they now?
Early on, I was a big fan of composers who worked on the Commodore 64, like the SID, and there's composers like, you know, Martin Galway, Rob Hubbard, and these things, which I totally, you know, that was like the greatest music I ever heard. A little bit beyond that, it became more like Vangelis, Jean-Michel Jarre, Mike Oldfield, you know, people who were trying to break new ground while still keeping the melody and the harmony intact. And I think that's really what Vangelis did so well. He pushed the boundaries so much, but he always tried to keep the music. He always kept it about the music. He never forgot, you know, there's a fine line when you experiment too much and you're like, okay, we're experimenting for experimentation's sake. And that's when music can get kind of like, you know, strange. but, you know, I'm writing for, you know, it's a popcorn world, you know. So you know, you have to keep all that in mind. But how far can I push the limit while still being able to capture a main kind of mainstream, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Twitter, actually. Ryan wants to know, and we touched on this a tiny bit, in a series so focused on historical authenticity, was there consideration of some 16th century music like madrigals or things along those lines for Assassin's Creed?
Yeah, I did research that. And like I mentioned earlier, it was very interesting. I was not aware of the comedic opera, for example. That was something new. I was like, this is really interesting. And how popular it was back then when opera first became I guess you can call it a music style almost, or a part of a classical music. So I did a lot of research there. And I think what I also tried to do is maybe bring more folk and world music influences into the scores, since we are in all these different locations, and to take, okay, what instruments are, you know, are you going to identify with if we're in this location? And it's not always about being accurate. It's also just about giving the right kind of... you know, feeling, so it feels accurate, or people will feel it's accurate, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's accurate. There's this fine line you have to kind of think about when you do these things.
Yes. So. Yes. Yes.
I'm Abby from Maple Grove, and I'm wondering what other video game composers do you like?
That's interesting.
That's a good question.
I like Gary Scheiman. I think he's done some very interesting stuff.
Bioshock.
Yeah, Bioshock was a very cool score. And I also liked what they did with the Halo theme. You know, I thought, wow, that really is a memorable line. You just need to hear that, and you're instantly, you know, okay, that's Halo. I mean, that's a successful score.
Yes. Michael Salvatore and Marty...
O'Donnell.
Yeah. O'Donnell, thank you.
Yeah. So I would mention, those two, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Ryan. Oh, it was the same person who asked the Twitter question a minute ago, but
oh,
I have a separate question to ask, I suppose. And that is that when Assassin's Creed 2 was released, the reviews universally praised it for expanding the gameplay significantly over Assassin's Creed 1. And I'm curious if you think that there was any sort of expansion of the sonic components, the audio in the game, from either Assassin's Creed 1 to 2 or a jump between any of the other games.
Yeah, you know, I've touched a little bit about Assassin's 1 and 2. I mean, one thing I haven't talked about is the jump between Assassin's 2 and Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, which is the third one.
Yep.
So that one was obviously, this, you know, Brotherhood was a lot darker story. The Borgia family is what we were up against, and those are not very nice people, you know.
No.
So, yeah, that's what my research tells me. So it is, to me, that the Brotherhood almost feels like an extension of Assassin's 2, in a sense that Assassin's 2 had a lot of the more maybe positive feeling music, you know, kind of like things are not that bad, you know, or things are have been bad, but you'll be okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Brotherhood went a lot darker, but you know, it's I think they work well as almost like companion pieces, whereas Brotherhood has more aggression, more darkness, and then you know, Assassin's Creed has almost more ethereal music. But when you put them together, I think it's I think they kind of fit together.
Good. Yes.
Hi, I'm Malcolm from St. Paul. I wanted to know, I read that when they were developing the engine for the game, it was actually originally being intended for Prince of Persia, that series. And I was wondering if you were already involved at that moment, and if you were, did you have to change your style when they decided to eventually make Assassin's Creed instead?
That's very interesting. Yeah, I was aware that it was there was a talk of this being Prince of Persia, but quite early on, it was decided that this should be its own franchise. It was such an ambitious project, and I think it went in a little bit different direction. And so, but yeah, I was aware of that. Yeah.
My name is April, and I was just wondering if you're going to make more Assassin's Creeds.
I can't really talk about that. I'm not allowed to. I would get in big trouble. So, but there is definitely more music on the way of all kinds of other stuff.
Yes. So. And Ubisoft has not made it a secret that they want to annualize this franchise. I mean, I've seen that. They want to... this is not anything you've told me, or I mean, this is stuff I've just... They've made this very public, that there will be an Assassin's Creed every year. Indefinitely. So, yay! I mean, this is just stuff that, you know, is floating around. It could be all wrong, but yeah. Go ahead.
I'm Tori from Maple Grove. Since it's a video game and so much is based around what the player actually does, how do you pace or tailor the music to, you don't know what the player is going to do, but they may do it for a long or short amount of time?
That's a really good question. I mean, that is one of the differences between film music and video game music. You know, with film, you have everything kind of lined up, and you can always follow the film, and you kind of know where to go. But with games, you don't have that luxury. So, you know, it's a lot about trying to figure out how the game will feel when you play it, and what is something that could be cool for the game player when you're actually playing the game. So since I'm a gamer, I can totally, you know, that's kind of how I, how, you know, one of the start perspectives I take, what could be really cool to listen to while this happens. So, but it's true, you never know what the game player is going to do. And then, you know, but once, you know, once you engage in a mission, for example, that we have, you know, music playing for when you're doing these, you know, whether it's a really tense mission or when it's more like suspenseful or, you know, when, you know, we all have music to cover for all these things. But when you're just exploring in Assassin's Creed 2, you know, we went for more of a... just a mood that really kind of amplifies the exploration. It makes you want to explore more and just kind of hang out in the city. And so that's the idea.
We can have two more questions, I'm told. I'm not going to be the one to pick.
Stephen from Moorhead. So through the first few games, we've been confined to places around the Mediterranean, Italy, Jerusalem, those sorts of places. If you could take the series to somewhere totally different in the world and sort of draw on themes, where would you like to take it?
Denmark?
Yes, Copenhagen. There's some very interesting places to go. I mean, one, I used to live in New York City. I lived there for 10 years and in Manhattan, and I think it's a really fascinating place. And I just can't imagine how was this place even built, you know? It's just like skyscraper and big buildings everywhere for miles and miles. And I thought, wow, you know, I'd love to see, visit that city back when it was still being constructed and early on, you know, 17th, 18th century maybe or something like that, I thought. Or, you know, any major city, you know, London, Paris, but to see those cities, how they were back then, because they were still metropolises back then, mm-hmm. but they just look not like they do now, you know, so.
Yeah. Cool. Last question.
Hi, Jesse from Gattacast.
Hi, Jesse.
Jesper, I first learned from you from the Hitman games, and I was struck by how ambient in electronica those were, because it's not something that many games were doing at the time. I wonder, was there any challenge? Have you ever had any difficulty convincing people to go in such a ambient direction for somewhat of a dark game like that?
Let me think about that, because I think, you know, I end up working on projects where they're looking for that kind of thing. So I probably wouldn't even be considered for projects where they are looking for something completely different, for better or for worse, you know. But it's always been a challenge to try to do more electronic-based music. In, you know, a lot of people look at electronic music and say, well, it's inferior to having a live orchestra. Well, maybe I say a lot of people. I should say some people. You know, so in that aspect, I don't think electronic music isn't inferior. You know, I think it takes a lot for one composer, one person to sit down and write the whole piece in instead of saying, okay, we have this, you know, we have a big team of people working with us and we have an orchestra. So the demo might not sound awesome right now, but it will, you know. But if you're doing electronic, you have to create that awesomeness on your own. So there's different challenges there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for all your time. You're going to be hanging around a little bit here, maybe do some signing, and I suppose if anybody has any burning questions, you may maybe he might be polite enough to answer at that time. But thank you all very much for coming, and thank you, Jesper, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a special episode of Top Score from the UBS Forum at Minnesota Public Radio headquarters. Our guest this evening is Jesper Kidd, and I'm Emily Reese. We had additional support from Daniel Gillum, Hans Buto, Maury Jensen, and Cameron Wiley. Thank you for coming.